transcribed.
From Hollywood, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. Hopper, who daily reports to 30 million readers in America and 8 foreign countries, now reports to you on the air. Here is Hedda Hopper's Hollywood, from a desk by the window looking right down on Hollywood and Vine.
Over my shoulder while I write my column. We'll have news about famous people here in Hollywood and elsewhere. We'll have special music ranging from the Mitchell Choir Boys to Spike Jones, and personal visits with Raymond Massey and Irene Dunne. Okay, let's go. Here's some Hollywood stars who'll have a wonderful Christmas. Cary Grant and Betsy Drake start on the air next month in The Blandings, written by Nat Wolff and sponsored by TWA. Anne Southern was told by her doctor that she'll be able to resume her screen career in 1951. Marjorie Rambeau, for the first time in 5 years, walked around her hospital room on crutches and was told she would be able to walk without them very soon. Shelley Winters gets a month's vacation in New York with pay just to have fun. Farley Granger finishes his picture Day Before Christmas and joins her. Lucas Jello claims the Santa Claus will cost him $30,000. He's invited 60 people to his home. They'll trim the tree, and at midnight he passes out the presents and gives away Fords and Lassies, Pops, among other things, and he invited me, and I'm a-going. Our military men who have returned from Korea are saying in private that we've never been less prepared for war. The Navy is not in fighting shape. The men running our aircraft plants don't know what's expected of them. Our ground forces haven't been sufficiently trained. And our casualties in Korea have been appalling because there were no real facilities for medical aid. The other day, over a cup of tea, I had a visit with Irene Dunne. As everyone knows, she recently returned from London and the command performance opening of The Mudlark, the new 20th Century Fox picture in which she plays Queen Victoria. I know, Irene, everyone asks you a million questions about your trip. But you did have a wonderful time over there, didn't you?
Indeed I did. The people, meeting the king and queen, everything. Only I don't know whether it's Christmas or our reminiscing or the way the world is, but would you like to know the highlight of my trip, Hedda?
I certainly would.
Well, I'm not the least bit afraid of being corny. It was seeing the Statue of Liberty on my way home.
I wish more people these days would come right out and say it like that.
Well, for heaven's sake, why not? If ever there was a time it needed saying, it's now. With our ideas of freedom, tolerance, goodwill to men, America is, well...
It is good, but not perfect.
What do you say?
Something I heard you say once in the character of Mama, from the picture I Remember Mama. Don't you remember?
Well, I'm always making speeches. Oh, yes, of course I remember. I said, if anyone were to ask the Norwegian mama about America today, she would answer something like this. America. America is good. It's not perfect. Not yet. Is a verb, tolerance. Is not good, this verb, tolerance. Our Lord said we must love our neighbor, not just tolerate him. And then we have learned to love our neighbor as ourselves, no matter where he comes from. Then America is perfect.
Well, Irene, you've done your share as an ambassadress of goodwill. The honor bestowed upon you by the University of Notre Dame, the Latari Medal, the award from the Conference of Christians and Jews.
Yes, they were great honors. Hedda, but that's all over, and we haven't much time for reminiscing these days.
But wait a minute, Irene. There's one more thing in my memory department. I hope you haven't forgotten. That was around Christmas time, too, when you sang with the Mitchell Choir Boys.
Sang? Oh, Hedda, I haven't done much singing for years.
In Love Affair with Charles Boyer.
Well, aren't you sweet? That was a long time ago.
Well, I'm willing to bet it's a favorite memory of lots of people.
Wishing will make it so. That was the song.
Well, won't you make it so?
if you wish long enough, wish strong enough, you will come to know.
I wrote this down. Irene Dunne has given us many songs and many, many outstanding characterizations. And there'll be a new portrait to add when Mudlark opens at the Rivoli Theater in New York on December 23rd, when one of Hollywood's best-loved actresses plays England's greatest queen. After Margaret Truman appeared with Tallulah Bankhead on The Big Show, her father, Harry, telephoned Tallulah and thanked her. I'll bet she'd rather have had a letter. Nathan has had more than her share of heartache. Her mother died a few months ago. Her son joins the Air Force in January. And her husband tells her he's in love with Sarah Mae Burns of New York City. Kit Cornell's new play closes in Cleveland next week. John Steinbeck bought a home in New York for Elaine Scott, whom he'll marry December the 28th. Bert Lancaster, before making a record for the March of Dimes, took his young son, a polio victim, to have braces fitted to his legs. Clara Bow's been living quietly in Santa Monica for 3 months, working on the story of her life. The Fred Packard, she's J. Arthur Rank's daughter, are buying a ranch so they can have horses. It's time, said Rank, that my grandchildren learn to ride. The oldest is 4. No, we haven't halted martial aid to Great Britain. It's merely suspended. We're continuing to give money to rebuild her army and navy. And if their finances collapse again, we'll give direct aid in American dollars. I don't know whether I'm more sentimental than others, but old familiar tunes become my good friends. A classical melody I heard as a child or a sweet ballad I danced to as a young girl bring with them a flood of memories. That's why I've wanted for a long time to have a real set-to with a certain one-man musical demolition squad. The man who torpedoes my memories. Oh, Patsy, will you send our distinguished musical friend in?
With pleasure, Miss Hopper. He's been practicing out here with a machine gun.
Oh,
no, 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 no!
It only has blanks in it, Hedda.
Now, you put that thing down, Spot Jones.
And now we're just trying to figure out a beautiful finish for Goodnight, Sweetheart.
Oh, sure. Why let her suffer? Spike, that's exactly why you're here.
I know all about it.
Oh, sit down, Spike. It's a small office, but we try to make it homey.
Thank you. This is that rare opportunity a guy has to state his side of the case in your column. Well, here's mine. Isn't that beautiful?
Why, you can't me off that easy. You can simply take good music and master for it. So sit right down here and defend yourself. If there is any conceivable argument why you should...
Well, my arguments are right here, Hedda. Come on in, guys.
Oh, hell. What in the name of all...
going to be cramped in here, are you?
A couple of us can sit on the bookcase if you can sweep all the stuff off of the desk. I'm sorry, Miss Hopper.
Thank you, Tallulah Bankhead. What were you saying, Hedda?
This is what I meant. Taking a piece like Dance of the Hours and giving that the alarm clock treatment.
Well, Hedda, there's a good reason for everything I do. Take the lyrics of a song, for instance. They're important. So I try to make them clearer to the public, bring out their inner meaning. Now, you take Chloe. Nothing but confusion, all that swampland, fog, nightshade. So what do I do?
What do you do? I hate to think. I need help. Patsy, is Frankworth anywhere around?
Right here, Hedda. Coming to the rescue. Hurry up, boys. Get in there.
Boys, Frank, no. My office is coming apart at the seams.
Plenty of room. Just open the window for the trombone.
Hey, now, look, this isn't fair. His orchestra is twice my size.
Now, you send it yourself, Jones. A musician can't argue without his band.
Hedda, you want something he can't lounge up. Okay, boys. Hit it.
My pretty girl, it's like a melody.
Jones, you stop it. A pretty girl is like a melody. What possible connection can there be between a pneumatic drill and a pretty...
Well, I don't know what kind of a girl Frank has in mind, but my girl is a riveter at Lockheed.
And that little extra tap on the triangle, that's the rose she pinned on her overalls, I suppose.
That's my sensitive nature, you know. First and last, I'm a musician. Frank, I've got another idea, and we better...
Oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. Stop it, both of you. Get out of here. I quit. I give up.
Hedda, I'd like to play a song straight.
Well...
The balance may not be perfect, but we are a little crowded in here, you know.
No, not really. The only thing that's missing in here is a choir.
Hey, glad you reminded me. I just happen to have the Mitchell Choir boys right outside.
Come in, kids.
The whole choir and George Rock, too. All right, Georgie, you can sit on my lap.
Ready, everybody? All set? This is for Christmas tonight.
Good night, Georgie.
Good night, Mommy.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
Yes, Tommy. Thank you, Mommy, for the teddy bear and the funny little farm with the bright red hair and the cowboy boots and the three-wheel bike. But here's what I'd really like. Mommy, won't you buy a baby bride for Christmas for me?
You are welcome.
be a new one. Just buy a baby sister.
Or a baby brother.
One or the other for me.
The Mitchell Choir Boys, too. Yes, we need your music, Spike. It lets us have so much fun with the classics. Mrs. Gregory Peck was appalled when she paid 45 cents postage on each card she sent to England. That means nothing. In the old days, Tom Mix's cards cost $5 each. But that was in the days BT, before taxes. Rita Hayworth's daughter, Rebecca, lives in Ireland while Mama tours the world. Rebecca's father, Orson Welles, occupies Doris de Defresa's villa in Rome while she's in America. Where there's a Welles, there's a way. They said it couldn't be done, but unification got its biggest test in Korea, and the Army, Navy, and Marines fought and worked side by side as a team. Joan Crawford will be taking care of her house and her children during the holidays. Her helpers all walked out. John Lund flies to New York to spend Christmas week in a dentist chair. Ruth Roman was married in Las Vegas last night to Mortimer Hall. What kind of entertainment do people like? How much real art will they buy? Well, it always seems to surprise some of our showmen when a picture like Laurence Olivier's Hamlet turns out to be such a success at the box office. Personally, I've always felt that the public wants a lot more of this sort of thing than it gets. Well, 3 weeks ago, I had a visit with Laurence Olivier and Vivian Leigh just before they sailed for England, and I was glad to hear what they said on the same subject.
Well, Heather, I don't think it's surprising that people should be intrigued by good play. At the Old Vic in London, we used to give matinees of Shakespeare, especially for children.
And they loved it, even the parts they couldn't understand.
Shakespeare's always been a popular success. He always broke box office records, and so did the others who delivered real art instead of formula stuff. Real art, you know, whether it's Disney or Shakespeare, Fred Allen, or a fine picture like Treasure of Sierra Madre, sticks to the ribs a lot longer than a diet of gingerbread and soda pop. Good art is good showmanship.
That's what they said, and I certainly agreed. Well, yesterday, I heard that someone else is showing the same face in the taste of our public. A brand new company in New York is now recording classical plays in popular record album form. Not only Shakespeare, but others as well. The man who told me about it is a distinguished actor who just arrived to star in the 20th century picture David and Bathsheba, Raymond Massey.
Head of the first album this company made is Shakespeare's The Tempest. That's the one I did for them. It'll be in the stores this week.
Why The Tempest, Ray? It's not as well known as Romeo and Juliet, Macbeth, or...
Oh, Heather, why start with something people already know? Besides, it's one of those things you hear a line from and recognize, but you just don't know the source.
Go on, tell me more.
Well, it's a play of poetry more than plot. I suppose some of the most beautiful poetry ever written.
Well, heaven knows we could use a little beauty these days.
Oh, forget the world. Dream a little. It's a story of enchantment. I play Prospero, a magician. Oh, Duke of Milan, if you want to be factual. That's what Prospero really is, or was, before he was double-crossed by his own family and tossed out. But now he's on an island, a magic island, and he's studied up on the black arts to a point where he has all the arrows and spirits under his thumb. Even Ariel.
Ariel, that's the tiny sprite, isn't it? The magic one.
Supernatural, or super nuisance sometimes. But I keep Ariel colored all right, my captive, because I need him to work my revenge. Oh, I'm quite a fellow. There's nothing I can't do with Prospero. Do you know I can even summon up a tempest? Yes, a tempest. To shipwreck those double crosses, the false king and the others who plotted against me. A tempest to shipwreck them on my island of enchantment, to put my enemies at my mercy. And it wasn't an easy job. But by the end of the play, and in the ways and words of magic, I finally did it. Ariel and I. Only what then? What revenge? How should they be punished? Now does my project gather to a head. My charms crack not, my spirits obey, and time goes upright with his carriage. How's the day?
On the 6th hour. At which time, my lord, you said our work should
be. I did say so when first I raised the tempest. Say, my spirit, how fares the king and followers?
Confined together in the same fashion as you gave in charge, just as you left them. All prisoners, sir, in the lime grove which weathers him yourself. Cannot torch till your release. Your charms were strongly worked, and if Henry?
Dost thou think so, Spirit?
Why, what's that? Where I do mine?
And mine shall. Hast thou, which are but air, a touch, a feeling of their affliction, and shall not myself, one of their kind, that relish all as sharply passion as they, be kindlier moved than thou art? Though with their high wrongs I am struck to the quick, yet with my nobler reason against my fury do I take part. The rarer action is in virtue than in vengeance. They being penitent, the sole drift of my purpose doth extend not a frown further. Go, release them, Ariel. My charms I'll break, their senses I'll restore, and they shall themselves. Ye elves of hills, brooks, standing lakes, and groves, and ye that on the sands with Prince's foot to chase the ebbing Neptune and do fly him when he comes back, you demi puppets that by moonshine do the green sour ringlets make whereof be you not bite, and you whose pastime is to make midnight mushrooms that rejoice to hear the solemn curfew, by whose aid, weak monsters though ye be, I have bedimmed the noontide sun, called forth the mutinous wind, and twixt the green sea and the azure vault set roaring war. To the dread rattling thunder have I given fire, and rifted Jove's stout oak with his own bolt. But this rough magic I here abjure, and when I have required some heavenly music, which even now I do, to work mine end upon their senses that this airy charm is for, I'll break my staff, bury it 30 fathoms in the earth, and deeper than did ever plummet sound, I'll drown my book. Ariel, come hither, Spirit. Set Caliban and his companions free. Untie the spell. How now, Moody? What is thou canst demand?
My liberty.
Quickly, Spirit. Thou shalt ere long be free.
Merrily shall I live now under the blossom that hangs on the bough. Where the bee hops dead on the eye, in the cold bell I lie.
Why, that's my dainty Ariel. I shall miss thee. But yet thou shalt have freedom. So, so, so. Our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits, and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherits shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
This week, an unusual letter came to my desk. Kenneth Law, a high school boy of Cincinnati, Ohio, wrote it. Listen to what he says. A group of high school boys like myself are trying to do a job. We want to help bring peace again to the world.
We're not old enough to fight for peace in the United Nations. We're just ordinary fellows. But we've hit on a plan. We want to put Christ back into Christmas. We want to make people realize Christmas is important because it's Christ's birthday, not just a holiday where we send cards and exchange presents. We thought maybe if we began putting Christ back into Christmas, men will put him back in their daily lives. And we believe if we can succeed in putting Christ back into Christmas and back again into our daily lives, peace again may descend upon this earth. Have we the power to make this boy's dream come true? We have. The man of Galilee hasn't been much in the news lately. He doesn't hold a seat in the United Nations.
His teachings are ground out by the hymns of hate emanating from the capitals of the world. But we can put him back into his rightful place. We, the people, can do it. We can do it by putting him back in our daily lives, as this boy suggests. And the rest will follow. Because no man who follows the teachings of Christ can veto peace in the world. So thank you and bless you, Kenneth. You have shown us the way. The only way.
Want you to celebrate it with such wonderful people as Lum and Abner, Elsa Lanchester, Bing Crosby, and Charles Lawton. Not to mention Mickey Mouse, Pluto, Donald Duck, and a preview glimpse of Alice herself from the wonderland of Walt Disney.
Good night, everybody.
Make a date for next Sunday for Hedda Hopper's Hollywood. From the ringside seat, the desk by the window looking right down on Hollywood and Vine.
Transcribed next Theater Guild with Kirk Douglas on NBC.